I'm excited to tell you about the world's number one expanding garden hose and their brand new product, the Pocket Hose Ballistic. Look, I do not like taking care of my lawn. I abuse my hose. I drag it all over the asphalt driveway. I tug it this way. I tug it that way. But the Pocket Hose Ballistic handles it all. This hose has changed my landscaping life. It's the toughest pocket hose ever built, reinforced with liquid crystal polymer used in bulletproof vests, something I know a little bit about. It's super lightweight, easy to manage, easy to store, and when you want to use it, you turn the water on, it grows, and then when you turn the water off, it shrinks back down to pocket size. Pretty self-explanatory. It also comes with the pocket pivot, which gives you total freedom of movement at the spigot with 360-degree rotation. You move, it follows, and the water flows. And listen, I'm sure there are some of you saying, Derek, it's just a hose. But the pocket hose carries over 100 patents worldwide. So this isn't your typical hose. And now, for a limited time, when you purchase a new Pocket Hose Ballistic, you'll get a free 360-degree rotating pocket pivot and a free thumb drive nozzle. Just text DETECTIVE to 64000. That's DETECTIVE to 64000 for your two free gifts with your purchase. One more time. Text DETECTIVE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just 10 bucks. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
On April 10th, 2001, an explosion tore through a Scottsdale, Arizona home, sending flames into the air and shaking the surrounding neighborhood. Inside, investigators discovered a devastating scene. 38-year-old Mary Fisher and her two children, Brittany and Bobby, had been killed in their own beds, and the evidence showed they were murdered before the fire ever began. The scene had been carefully staged with accelerants, a disconnected gas line, and ignition devices used to attempt to destroy everything inside. But one person was missing, Mary's husband and the children's father, Robert Fisher. More than 25 years later, Robert has never been found, and investigators are still working to find him. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Now, as you can probably tell from the trailer, this is a different type of case than I've done in the past. While it technically is unsolved, there is a suspect in this case, and he's currently wanted. April 10th marked the 25-year anniversary since this case occurred, so I felt like now would be a good time to bring some renewed attention. And I do like the idea of this not necessarily being a whodunit, but more so where are they? Although I will put it out there right now. As far as I'm concerned, it's still not 100% that Robert Fisher is responsible. It's highly likely, but without finding him, we'll never truly know. And so I'm going to put my John Walsh hat on tonight and, you know, play a little America's Most Wanted. And we're going to go searching for a fugitive. And we have a lot to cover, so let's dive into this week's case. Mary Jean Cooper was born on October 3rd, 1962 in Chicago, Illinois. She later grew up in Scottsdale, Arizona, alongside her sister Myrna. There isn't much publicly known about her early life, but in 1984, she met Robert William Fisher through a church social group. They were both in their early 20s, and neither had been married before. Robert had grown up in New York as a middle child between two sisters, and like Mary, his family later relocated to Arizona, eventually settling in Tucson. After graduating high school, he enlisted in the Navy and was stationed in San Diego, where he trained in aircraft handling and fuels. He completed one enlistment before leaving the service. After the Navy, Robert became a firefighter with the Fire Protection District. Not long after starting that job, he met Mary, and the two began dating, and within 1 year, they were married. But that stability, it didn't last. Robert suffered a back injury on a fire call, which led to a lower back surgery, a medical discharge from the department, and ongoing severe back pain. With a firefighting career no longer an option, Robert went back to school and transitioned into healthcare, eventually becoming a respiratory therapist and cardiovascular technician. According to the Arizona Republic, the couple later purchased a three-bedroom ranch-style home near 74th Street and McDowell Road in Scottsdale. They settled into that home and began building a life together. Over the next few years, they started a family. On April 27, 1988, they had their first child, a daughter named Brittany Jean. Then on September 21st, 1990, their son Robert William Jr. was born, and they usually called him Bobby, so if I mention him throughout the episode, I'll refer to him as Bobby and his father as Robert. The family was very active in their church, and as the kids got older, their schedules filled up quickly with activities. It was a busy household, and Mary played a central role in keeping everything running smoothly. She was a very present mom, handling the day-to-day responsibilities and making sure the kids were always taken care of. By April 2001, Mary and Robert had been married more than 15 years. Brittany was 12, Bobby was 10, and both kids were heavily involved in their own interests. Brittany played baseball, basketball, and softball, and she did well in school and had recently been inducted into the National Junior Honor Society. Bobby played the trumpet, and he had recently completed a hunter safety course so that he could go hunting with Robert, who enjoyed hunting and fishing. Now, Robert was approaching his 40th birthday on April 13th. He had taken the day off from work and had planned a family camping trip to celebrate, but that trip would never happen. At approximately 8:45 a.m. on April 10th, the Fisher family's home exploded and was quickly engulfed in flames. The blast shook the surrounding neighborhood, and according to 12 News, the force was strong enough to rip through the roof before the house even caught on fire. By the time the firefighters responded, most of the home had already been destroyed. Once the fire was extinguished, investigators made a devastating discovery. Inside, they found the charred bodies of 38-year-old Mary, 12-year-old Brittany, and 10-year-old Bobby Jr. They were still in their beds, and there was no sign that any of them tried to escape. On the other hand, Robert was nowhere to be found. Neither was Mary's silver 2000 Toyota 4Runner or the family dog, a Queensland Heeler mix named Blue. I do want to point out, though, that Robert's Dodge Ram pickup truck was still parked in the carport when the explosion happened, and there are some videos out there where you can see his pickup truck being towed away on the back of a flatbed, and you can see the whole side of it has been completely charred from this explosion. It's pretty intense when you think about the fact that there were human beings inside of this home. And at first, when this all happened, there was an assumption that Robert had probably already left for work, taking Mary's car for some reason, and had no idea what had happened. But when officers contacted his employer, they learned that he had never showed up that morning. So at this point, detectives were dealing with three victims inside the home and one missing adult who could not be accounted for. And I have to be honest, if I was the investigating officer showing up to the scene, there's one of two scenarios that I'm thinking at this point. The number one being what I just kind of described here, where Robert left for work or went on a hunting trip or fishing trip by himself or with some friends, and I'm expecting him to show up and be absolutely devastated by what he's walked into, having no idea what occurred or if his family's okay. The other scenario would be, okay, whatever happened here, Robert was the target of this, and his family was killed out of retaliation, and now we may have a triple homicide and an abduction. That's where my head is at right now. And I guess in the way back of my mind, because of all the stuff that I've seen over the years, yeah, it probably crosses my mind that, hey, he's nowhere to be found. We have this scene. could he be responsible for it? But I'd be lying to you if I said that would be the main focus at this point. I'd be thinking that I was about to make a death notification to a husband and a father, not that this guy just blew up his whole family. Eventually, Mary, Brittany, and Bobby's bodies were transported for autopsies. And although all three bodies were severely burned, the medical examiner found no soot or thermal damage in their windpipes, which indicated they had already been dead before the fire began. The autopsies also revealed exactly how they died, and frankly, it's horrific. All three victims had their throats slit. Mary and Brittany had the deepest cuts. Their wounds were so severe that the knife left marks on their vertebrae. Mary had also been shot in the back of the head, but the medical examiner was unable to determine whether the gunshot or the throat wound came first. But either way, the killings were clearly deliberate and methodical. And obviously, we cover a lot of crime here. You guys have heard everything at this point. But I think I can speak for all of you when I say hearing about the killing of a child, specifically in this manner, how awful is that? And they're all tragic. But these children were alive when this happened. They were aware of what was going on. And if we're going to talk about the possibility of who was involved here, imagine being 10 or 12 years old and dying in that manner by the person you're supposed to be able to trust the most, the person who's supposed to protect you. It's tough to wrap your head around. I mean, these cases, I've been doing this now for over 20 years, and I still just don't understand how any human being could conduct themselves in this way, specifically to a child. I just can't rationalize it. And I don't think I'll ever be able to. The only reasonable explanation that I can come up with, and it doesn't even matter if you're religious or not, is that they are the spawn of Satan, right? They are literally the worst of the worst, regardless of whether or not there's an underlying mental condition. They are from somewhere that most of us don't know about. They are cut from a cloth that is in the same breath of Rex Heuermann and Brian Koberger. These are not regular human beings. There's something different. And the unfortunate thing is that there's more than just these guys out there. They're walking amongst us. And unfortunately, we're not really able to identify them until they do something like this. It takes a really demented person to do something like this, not only to a child, but your own child. Hence the reason why we're covering this case. I don't know if Robert's responsible, but we need to find him and get to the bottom of it. Now, back at the Fisher household, investigators were combing through whatever remained, and it quickly became clear that this wasn't just a regular house fire. No, this building had been rigged to explode. According to the FBI, investigators found residue of a highly flammable liquid inside the house. That same accelerant was found on Mary, Brittany, and Bobby. Additionally, a firecracker was found inside the home, along with a candle and a battery connected to a wire and foil paper, which investigators believed could have been used to start the fire. All of these items were classified as ignition devices, and there was one other critical piece of information that investigators uncovered. We're going to talk about it right after the break. Ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep, and that's why I switched to Miracle Made Sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it doesn't matter. These sheets will help keep you in the comfort zone so you get a great night's sleep. And the most important part, at least in my opinion, especially when it comes to sheets, is how do they feel? Well, they're extremely comfortable. They feel just as good, if not better, than some of the sheets that I've slept on in five-star hotels, but without the steep price tag. So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're ridiculously comfortable. They're also great for your skin. All that hidden bacteria that you find in regular sheets, they can clog your pores, they can cause breakouts. And last time I checked, I don't think anybody's looking for either of those things. But with Miracle Made's antibacterial design, it helps you sleep cleaner and clearer night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest by going to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use my promo code detective, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free three-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with their 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective, code detective at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Okay, we're back. And before the break, I had mentioned that there was one more critical piece of information that really drove home the point that this wasn't some tragic accident. It was an intentional arson. And that was the fact that a natural gas line inside the home had been disconnected, allowing gas to fill the space. And at some point, that gas came in contact with a flame, causing the explosion, which ultimately engulfed the house. Many of the items in the house had been destroyed by the explosion and the subsequent fire, but Robert's gun safe had not. And when investigators looked inside, they determined that one gun was missing. It was a .38 caliber revolver, and investigators believed it had been used to murder Mary. All these details led investigators to theorize that Robert was not a missing person. He was a family annihilator, and he was a fugitive. Investigators believed that he had killed his family and then set the house up to explode in the hopes that all the evidence, including human remains, would be destroyed. That way, people would think that he had perished in the fire, and no one would know that he was gone. No one would even look for him. But unfortunately for him, that's not what happened. Detectives began taking a closer look at Robert's life, and what they found suggested that there were two very different sides to him. There was the version that people saw publicly, and then there was what was happening inside the home. To outsiders, Robert appeared to be a devoted husband and father. He was active in the church and, by most accounts, presented himself as stable and responsible. But behind closed doors, investigators learned that Robert was extremely controlling in every part of the marriage. He controlled their finances and didn't allow Mary to access spending money. He also expected things to be done a very specific way, and when they weren't, it often led to arguments. Witnesses said that he would openly criticize Mary in front of others if she did something that he viewed as wrong. And he wouldn't just do it once. He'd do it over and over again, for even days. There were other issues in the marriage as well, including infidelity. In the late 1990s, Robert was unfaithful. Mary tried to leave the marriage, but Robert threatened to kill himself if she did. Divorce was something that Robert was strongly against. His parents had divorced when he was younger, and he believed it had a lasting impact on his life. He had reportedly told people that he would never get a divorce and would take his own life before allowing that to happen. Despite those issues, Mary and Robert stayed together and attended counseling, but by early 2001, things had not improved. One neighbor later told The Hunt with John Walsh that the couple argued frequently. They said they could often hear Mary yelling things like, quote, "You're worthless. I could have done better than you. We should get a divorce." On the other hand, they never heard Robert yell at all. And some may think, oh, well, maybe she was the aggressor. Maybe he was just being verbally abused. No. I've seen this before. These types of guys, they're gaslighters, right? This, to me, is reactive abuse that we're hearing. This is him verbally, maybe even potentially physically abusing her habitually, and this is her reacting to that. And what the neighbor is hearing is that response. There's also something to be said for a guy who speaks softly, right? Speaks quietly, draws you in, makes you come closer to gain your attention because you can't hear him from a distance. They make passive-aggressive comments under their breath. I've seen this person before, and unfortunately, I'm sure some of you have as well. So I'm not taking this report of hearing Mary yelling at Robert and the things she was saying as her being the problem. There's no doubt in my mind, Robert's the one we should be looking at. One of Mary's friends told detectives that by April of 2001, Mary had been considering divorce. Mary's boss added that Mary was also becoming more independent, which was something Robert did not like. On the night of April 9th, neighbors again reported hearing the couple arguing. They could not make out exactly what was being said, but detectives believed that argument may have been related to Mary wanting to end the marriage. So based on everything they had learned, investigators believed that they had found their motive for why Robert killed Mary and the kids. It was because Mary wanted a divorce, and that was something that Robert would never allow. So at that point, detectives shifted their focus to locating Robert, but that would be a very difficult task. They learned that his cell phone had been turned off on the night of April 9th, which limited their ability to track his movements. In the end, they were able to develop one lead. At 10:42 p.m., Robert was captured on surveillance footage using an ATM about a half a mile from the Fisher home. He was driving Mary's 4Runner and withdrew $280, which was the maximum allowed at that machine. In the footage, he was wearing an Oakland Raiders baseball cap. And if you're watching on video right now, then you're seeing the footage on the screen. But if you're listening on audio, jot some of these timestamps down. And when you have the opportunity, come over to the YouTube channel, check them out, because this isn't the only footage we have. There's definitely some images here that are going to add another layer to this story. According to Unsolved Mysteries, based on the ATM footage, investigators theorize that at some point between 9:30 and 10:15 p.m. on April 9th, Robert killed his entire family. After that, he set up the home to explode in an effort to destroy evidence. Then he took Mary's vehicle, stopped at the ATM, and fled the area. They also acknowledged the possibility that they were wrong about the sequence of events. It was also possible that Robert went to the ATM first and then went to the house and killed his entire family. But either way, they believed he was the killer. And so, a manhunt for Robert Fisher began. Investigators continued working to track his movements after the ATM withdrawal, but there were no immediate breaks. That finally changed on April 20th, 10 days after the murders, when a camper discovered Mary's 4Runner abandoned deep in the Tonto National Forest near one of Robert's favorite hunting areas just east of Young, Arizona. According to 12 News, investigators went to the area but did not find Robert. They did, however, find the family dog, Blue. He was near the vehicle, frightened and hungry, but otherwise relatively in good condition. Detectives believed that Robert had left Blue behind intentionally because traveling with a Blue cattle dog would have made him more noticeable, especially in a remote area. Now, I have a different opinion on this. This theory is absolutely plausible, especially when we consider all the other circumstances. But I also have another theory on this, and I'll lay it out to you guys during the perspective. One thing to note about this secondary crime scene was that investigators looked over the 4Runner and they realized that it had been wiped clean. The only thing left behind was Robert's Oakland Raiders baseball cap, the same one that was seen in the ATM footage. The outside of the vehicle was also clean, with very little dust or debris and a small number of pine needles on top. These details, combined with Blue's condition, led investigators to theorize that the 4Runner had been left there within 24 hours of being discovered. According to the Arizona Republic, investigators, along with the SWAT team, launched an extensive search of the surrounding area. They looked for any signs of Robert, including footprints, clothing, or evidence of a campsite, but the terrain made the search especially challenging. The area is known for having numerous caves, many of which are large enough for a person to enter. So investigators searched those spaces using specialized equipment, including sewer cameras, to take a deeper look inside just in case there was any indication that Robert had been in one of those caves. They even deployed gas grenades in an attempt to provoke any sign of life. So if he was inside one of them, they couldn't get deep enough, you try to smoke him out. Unfortunately, even with all these tactics and techniques and using whatever technology they could, they found no sign of Robert anywhere. And after several days of not finding any evidence to suggest that Robert had remained in that area after dumping the vehicle, the search was called off. And so at this point, they weren't really sure exactly what happened to Robert, but they had multiple theories. One was that Robert had taken his own life somewhere in the surrounding terrain, possibly in one of the caves, and they just hadn't found his body yet. Another possibility was that the intention was to hide out in one of these caves to avoid apprehension, and he died, either from the lack of oxygen or becoming trapped in one of these narrow pathways. But until they found him, there was really no way to confirm that. Investigators also considered the possibility that the 4Runner may have been abandoned at this location intentionally to mislead investigators, giving him an opportunity to flee the area undetected and give him some time to get away while they were searching for him in the woods. And for those of you who pulled up a map and are sitting there looking at it saying, I don't think that's what happened here, I do want to point out that despite how remote this location is, it is within walking distance to both the Young Highway and the Fort Apache Indian Reservation, and detectives believe that Robert could have reached one of these two locations and potentially obtained a ride to leave the area. Is that likely? I don't know. But it is possible, and this theory gained some traction when a witness reported seeing a man matching Robert's description walking north along a road near where the vehicle was later found. Now, she couldn't remember the exact date, but it was around the time the car was located. And listen, that's a scary thought for investigators. They knew that if Robert had gotten a ride out of the area, the possibilities of where he could be now were endless. And I also want to remind everyone that this was months before September 11th, when security border controls were far less restrictive than they are today. He could have taken a flight out of the country or driven to Mexico without raising any immediate suspicion. And so those were the more prominent theories, but there was another theory as well. Robert was still in the Tonto Forest, living off the grid, using his experience with hunting and fishing to survive. But the people who knew him best did not believe that scenario was realistic. You see, after his back injury, Robert lived with chronic pain and relied on prescription medications, including a narcotic painkiller and a muscle relaxer. Friends said that even on hunting trips, he needed help carrying his gear. And so, based on all that information, investigators questioned whether Robert would have been physically capable of surviving long-term in that environment, and out of all the scenarios presented, in their opinion, that was the least likely. And I agree, although I do think Robert could still be in the Tonto Forest. Stay with me and we'll talk about it at the end. Unfortunately, the discovery of the Forerunner would be the last significant piece of physical evidence investigators recovered in this case. After that, there was no signs of Robert anywhere. He never used his bank account again, he never turned on his cell phone, and so they were really at a dead end. Although I will say, without going into too much of it, if you watch some of the other podcasts or videos that are out there, there have been a few reported discoveries where he may have been caught on camera. I watched those videos. I was looking at the different angles. Personally, I'm no expert in that field, but I don't think, based on what I saw in those images, that it was him. That's just my opinion. And so by mid-July of 2001, authorities decided to escalate things. They issued a warrant charging Robert with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of arson. A federal warrant was also issued, charging him with unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. The search for Robert Fisher continued, but there were no leads. Months passed with no verified sightings or evidence of his whereabouts, and at this point, the investigation felt hopeless. We have more to cover. We're going to talk about it right after the break. You've heard me talk about Hungry Root before, so you know how much I love it because it truly simplifies my life. As a busy parent who works a lot of hours, it's been such a game changer when it comes to reaching my health goals by doing all of my weekly food shopping with Hungry Root. Hungry Root plans all of my meals and groceries for the week, fills my cart, and delivers everything I'll need to eat healthy every day, all while fitting my health goals, dietary preferences, and most importantly, my budget. I actually had a Hungry Root meal the other day that went back to one of my personal favorites, which is the honey mustard chicken pretzel sandwich. I had a side of bread and butter pickles. I may or may not have put some of those bread and butter pickles on my sandwich. A little bit of a hack there. You can try it. You can thank me later. I also had a side of zucchini. And then for like my dessert, I did some Siggy's non-fat vanilla yogurt and the almond chickpea cookie dough. I'm not going to waste too much time on the cookie dough. I've talked to you about it before. Even Shannon, my editor, has tried it. It's absolutely delicious. If you didn't tell me it was made with chickpea, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between regular cookie dough, but it's a lot more healthy. Absolutely love it. And that's one of the main reasons that I've stuck with Hungry Root. It's convenient, it tastes really good, and on top of that, it helps me reach my health goals. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a triple threat, absolute winner. And unlike other food delivery companies, Hungry Root now offers over 50,000 chef-crafted recipes to choose from each week, with many ready in under 15 minutes or less. And with over 1,000 grocery items like smoothies, sweets, kid snacks, salad kits, ready-to-eat meals, and supplements, it's insanely easy to find options that fit everyone's taste and nutrition goals. And Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics, or for organic produce and non-GMO options, and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. I really do think you're going to love Hungry Root as much as I do, and for a limited time, you can get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. All you have to do is go to hungryroot.com/detective and use my code detective. Once again, that's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective, to get 40% off your first box, plus a free item of your choice for life. That's a great deal. Go check it out. You will not regret it. Cravings aren't just about nicotine, they're about habit. The hand-to-mouth motion, oral fixation, the momentary pause. When that loop is broken, cravings spike. Fume replaces that habit with a flavored air fidget device that gives your hands and mouth something to do, distracting cravings without nicotine, vapor, or batteries. So don't just quit, upgrade that habit loop and reach for a Fume instead. For those of you who don't know by now, Fume is a flavored air device designed to help people quit smoking or vaping by breaking that hand-to-mouth pattern. And as I just mentioned, no nicotine, no batteries, no vapor, just clean, natural flavors, and a fidget-friendly design that actually feels good to use. I talk about the Fume all the time. As you can probably see if you're watching on video, it matches my desk. I love that walnut color, and it's got a high-quality wood, high-quality metal. And I've had this thing for over 2 years, and it's held up. It looks exactly the way it did the day I got it. And it's got the magnets, the strong magnets, the little twisting action if you want a little ASMR there. And it just feels weighted. It feels like high-quality materials, and I think that's why it's held up so long. On top of that, they got some amazing flavors. My personal favorite is the orange vanilla, but they also have flavors like crisp mint and raspberry. So whatever your preference is, they got something that's going to check that box. And we all know how difficult breaking bad habits can be, right? Because the first few days it's easy. You're like, I got this, no problem. But then by like the first week, maybe even the second week, your brain starts to negotiate with you. And all of a sudden you find yourself resorting back to those old bad habits. But with Fume, it'll help you replace that motion or that old routine, so you're not falling back into that old pattern. That's what it's all about. And if you're thinking about trying Fume, now is a great time to do so, because when you grab your journey pack, you'll also get a free gift just for using my code detective. Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps toward better habits, and now it's your turn. So use my code detective to get a free gift with your journey pack. All you have to do is head over to tryfume.com, that's T-R-Y-F-U-M.com, and use my code detective to claim your free gift today. Okay, we're back, and in June of 2002, just over a year after the murders, the FBI added Robert to their 10 most wanted fugitives list. Along with that, a $50,000 reward was offered for information leading to his arrest. Around that same time, Unsolved Mysteries featured the case. Detectives told the show that they believed Robert was still alive and may have started a new life under an assumed identity. Mary's sister Myrna shared a similar belief. She felt that if Robert had intended to take his own life, he would have done it shortly after the murders. Members of Robert's family, however, expressed a different perspective. They said that they struggled to believe he was responsible, he loved his family, and they could not imagine him killing them. Well, that's how it usually is, right? Nobody thinks that their loved one is capable of something like this until they look at the evidence and they look at the facts. And even then, it's still difficult, but the rational people come to the same conclusion that we all do, is that people aren't always who they appear to be. And regardless of what experiences you may have had with them, hell, you may have raised them. Sometimes it's just not enough. It's like we talked about earlier. I think innately some people are just born evil. And it may take a while for that to come out of them, but eventually it does. And it's hard for people to accept, but the facts don't lie. In the years that followed the Unsolved Mysteries episode, the search for Robert continued, with reported sightings coming in different parts of North America. Investigators followed up on those leads, but none were confirmed to be him. And this is what I was talking about earlier. There's some different videos out there you can go watch where you can see these sightings of people who had taken photos in different locations. And there was even one where there was a gentleman in the background and he tried to grab their camera and said, "Don't take a picture of me." And it wasn't until they looked at their footage later that they said, oh, that could be Robert Fisher. But even when I look at the video, even when I look at these images, especially from the profile view, it doesn't look like him to me. Now, you can go look at it if you want. We'll have a screenshot up here. But yeah, I'm just not seeing it. I don't think it's Robert Fisher. Let's fast forward to April 10th, 2026, which as of this recording would be 7 days ago. This would also mark 25 years since Mary, Brittany, and Bobby were killed. To mark this tragic milestone, the lead detective spoke with ABC 15 about the status of the case. He confirmed that the investigation remains open and detectives continue to receive tips on a regular basis, and each one is followed up on. He also reaffirmed the fact that they are committed to finding answers, even though, at this point, they're not sure if Robert is still alive, as there have been no confirmed sightings. But he went on to mention that that has not changed how they approach this case. The lead detective explained, quote, "I have to work this case as if he's still around, that he's still a fugitive, and that one day he'll be caught." And as much as I love that quote, that's the last update we have on this case. Investigators are still searching for Robert Fisher, and they have made it very clear they are not going to stop until they find him. Okay, let's dive in this perspective, and this is going to be pretty clear cut because this is more of a call to action. This is, like I said, my America's Most Wanted episode where we believe we know who's responsible for this heinous act. We just have to find him. And so let's quickly talk about the two most prominent theories. The first one being something that I hadn't mentioned a lot tonight. And frankly, during my research, I didn't find a lot of mention of it anywhere. But I'm going to bring it up because that's what I do. We got to explore all angles, right? And that's what we do here on Detective Perspective. We think outside the box. So this theory is definitely something that some of you may roll your eyes at, but just stick with me, right? Because until we find them, we can't rule anything out. I know what everyone's thinking at this point, and we're going to get to that theory, but let's imagine a scenario where there's something more in Robert's past that we're not aware of. We know that his 40th birthday was coming up and that he was planning this family trip, and yet we're to believe that this all went down. But what if we looked more into Robert's history, his past? We already know there were things about him that he didn't disclose publicly. What if he had gambling problems or involved with some criminals that we were unaware of? Maybe some nefarious activity that even the people closest to him didn't know he was participating in. Could he have created some enemies along the way? Maybe. It would have to be pretty bad for it to get to this, but just stick with me for now. They go to the house, they take Robert, they kill his family, they stage the crime scene to make it look like this explosion, hoping to get rid of all the evidence. They take Robert and his car to this forest, and whatever happens at that point, your guess is as good as mine. But they wanted to make it look like Robert killed his family for whatever reason. Was it retaliation? Was it to send a message? I don't know. But if you remember what I said earlier in this episode, according to investigators, the car was cleaned. Now, I have some skepticism about the car being cleaned. What does that actually mean? Was it just neat? I don't know. I didn't investigate it. I didn't see the car itself. I didn't have the chance to go in there and look around. But if it truly was wiped down, if you were going to flee the area or you were going to go kill yourself, why would you take the time to wipe down the car? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Everyone knows you were in the car. If you're trying to leave it as a decoy, you leave the car there. Yeah, they're going to find your prints or your DNA. So what? That's expected. Why would you take the time and the effort to wipe the car down before fleeing the area? That doesn't add up to me. Now, I could sit here for 20 minutes and pick that whole theory apart because I don't believe that's what happened. I'm just putting it out there and I'm hoping that investigators who may be watching this, who potentially working this case, are rolling their eyes because they have evidence that rules us out definitively. But I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't do this. So yeah, we could poke holes in it. I won't spend the time doing it. There's about 9 different things, including bringing the dog with them, that would make no sense. You could just leave him in the house, kill the kids, kill the mom a certain way, kill him a certain way, and still accomplish your goal of framing him for not only killing his family, but then killing himself. You don't have to transport him up to the woods with his dog to do that. That's just one of the many reasons that this theory wouldn't track. So let's transition to something that's much more probable. And that's that Robert killed his own family and then fled the area. Let's take that as fact that he did this. He's responsible for it. Let's get to the point where we find the forerunner in the forest with Blue. That's really the fork in the road here. What happened at that point? And there's really only two outlets. The first one being he left Blue there, fled the area, wanted people to think that he might still be in the woods, and he got out of there as fast as he could, and he may be out there right now walking amongst us. Me personally, as much as I've laid out things that make it possible, I truly don't believe that's what happened here. From where I'm sitting, I believe that Robert is still in the Tonto Forest. Let me explain. I don't believe the car was wiped down. I believe it might have been clean, but I don't think any effort was made to wipe down the car. And I'm doing that in air quotes for my people on audio. What I think happened is, for the reasons that investigators have already concluded, Mary wanted a divorce, and he's the type of person that if he couldn't have her and he couldn't have this perfect life, no one could. So he killed her and the kids with the full intention on killing himself. Why he didn't do it in the house, I don't know. But for whatever reason, he killed them, blew up the house, took the dog with him. I can only imagine that he was close with Blue, pulls out some money, and then for some reason decides, no, I can't do this. I'm having a change of heart. Maybe I'm going to flee the area. Maybe that's why I grabbed the money. But then he decides not to. There's also a possibility, as investigators have pointed out, that he grabbed that money before he killed his family. And I know some of you are going to say, well, if you're going to kill yourself, why would you take out money at any point? I agree. I can't explain it. It doesn't make sense. It's the reason we're covering this case. But it could be as simple as just a change of heart. Stick with me for now. He goes up to the woods, and at that point, he knows what he's going to do. If you remember, there was a .38 caliber revolver missing from that safe. Yes, it more than likely was used to kill Mary, but he took the gun with him. Why did he do that? For safety or to take his own life? I tend to believe the latter. So he gets up to the forest. At that point, he says his goodbyes to Blue. He leaves him in an area where the vehicle is going to be found. And because the vehicle will be found, so will the dog. And the dog's going to be okay. It'll go on to live its life. And as crazy as this sounds, for some reason, he kills his family, but not the dog. Again, can't explain it. Doesn't make a lot of sense. But he ends up going off into the forest, probably deep into the forest, because he doesn't want to be found. And he ends up in one of these caves with the firearm, and he takes his own life. And it could be as simple as they just didn't find the right cave, or due to animal predation, his body was discarded by animals as it was found. This area is vast, and it's a needle in a haystack to find this guy, especially if he's taken measures to avoid detection. So what do we do? For me, where I'm sitting, I would love to know if there's documentation as far as the grid search that was conducted originally. And with the advancements in science and technology, maybe you bring another team back out there. Are you going to find Robert's body? More than likely not. Maybe some skeletal remains. I think it's more likely that you would find evidence that he was there and maybe he was deceased. Potential clothing, the gun, things of that nature. And if you find those items, then you more than likely have your answer. And that's that Robert Fisher never left those woods. We got to use technology. We got to use science. LIDAR, drones, anything that we have at our disposal, maybe some teams that specialize in these types of searches in these environments and that type of topography who now can use the latest and greatest tools and techniques. Maybe they go back out there. Maybe they have better luck. We won't know until we try. I think that's the number one thing we can do here. Obviously, I'm going to give you the whole layout and the call to action if you happen to see Robert. But at this point, I'd like to use common sense with you guys. 25 years, he was on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives. Never been located, never been seen. Highly unlikely. Possible, but highly unlikely. I think he's still in those woods. I think if we take another search there, and we do what we can. Maybe we get lucky and we finally get the answers to this case. However, I may be wrong. He could still be out there. Maybe he's smarter than I think. Maybe he's taken enough precautions to avoid detection, and it's just going to take that right person. So just to recap, on April 10th, 2001, Mary Fisher and her two children, Brittany and Bobby, were found dead inside their Scottsdale, Arizona home after it exploded and caught fire. Investigators determined that all three had been killed before the fire and that the scene showed clear signs of it being intentionally set to destroy evidence. Mary's husband, Robert William Fisher, was missing and later captured on surveillance footage using an ATM on the night of the murders. His vehicle was found abandoned days later, but he has never been located. And as I mentioned earlier, we just crossed the 25-year mark, and there have been no confirmed sightings of Robert. However, if you have any information about this case, or you think you've seen Robert, you should call the Phoenix FBI office at 623-466-1999 or go to tips.fbi.gov. There is a $100,000 reward being offered. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Mary, Bobby, and Brittany. You guys know me by now. Whenever a case involves children, there's always a heightened intensity on my part. As a father, I just can't understand it, how anyone could hurt a child, never mind your own child. And I think the only way we'll ever get the answers to what happened that night is if we find Robert Fisher. And I truly believe he's still out in those woods. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make that search happen. Whatever we need to facilitate this operation, I'm available. People know how to reach me. And I hope it's done sooner than later, because everyone in that community, including the families, they've waited far too long. We need to find Robert, dead or alive. And then I believe we'll have our answers. Until that happens, everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you soon.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.